Ram. I have never prayed to you before. I have no tongue for it. No one, not even you, will remember if we were good men or bad. Why we fought or why we died. No. All that matters is that two stood against many. That's what's important. Baror pleases you, Kram. So grant me one request. Grant me revenge. And if you do not listen, then the hell with you.
You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Ten, nine, eight, seven, ignition sequence started. All engines are started. We have ignition. 2, 1, 0. We have a liftoff. We have a liftoff, and it's lighting up the area. It's just like daylight here at Kennedy Space Center as the Saturn V is moving off the pad. It is now clear of the tower.
Hello and welcome to the White Rocket Podcast, brought to you by White Rocket Books in association with the Earth Station One Network. It's one long conversation with a variety of guests about the best of popular culture. I'm Van Allen Plexico. Today's topic, quest films, movies in which a small group of heroes, maybe they're heroes, and maybe not, go on a lonely quest. And the four movies that we're going to be specifically talking about, maybe we'll think of some others along the way to talk about, but the four big ones we're going to talk about are Conan the Barbarian from 1982, Conan the Destroyer, the sequel, Krull, and The 13th Warrior. And joining me to discuss these films is Midnight Entertainment's own head honcho, Jim Yelton. Welcome back aboard the show, Jim.
Thanks, Van. It's been a while since I've been on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, the show's been kind of on semi-hiatus. I was able to get in the interview with Graham McNeil, but other than and that was just because that was the chance I had to do it, and I had to do it.
I just listened to that the other day.
What was that?
I just listened to that one the other day. That was really good.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, well, I had to jump on that when the opportunity was there. I was in the middle of pneumonia and bronchitis and asthma when I talked to him. I'm better now, but my voice is still pretty weak. I'm giving everything I've got to sound energetic for everybody out there. So we're going to try to talk about these four movies. And I would add that probably the greatest of all of this kind of movie is the first Lord of the Rings movie. But I'm anticipating that we'll do at some point down the line a Lord of the Rings movie trio of episodes, maybe. So we'll hold off on Fellowship of the Ring, but it really fits in the same idea. It's the little Dungeons and Dragons group that get together and go try to do something, you know. And
well,
yeah,
brought that up too, because, you know, when I was prepping, thinking about this and, you know, knowing that this was going to be the topic, that was the one thing I thought too, was, you know, it's Lord of the Rings and then everything else.
Yeah.
So you almost have to throw Lord of the Rings out of the conversation just to be able to concentrate on some of the other ones. It's the same with Star Wars. I mean, Star Wars is a really great quest movie. And it's funny because I just finished teaching a novel writing class a couple of weeks ago, and we were kind of talking about these sorts of stories. And I said, you know, basically everything is a quest story. I mean, if you get it right down to, you know, the bare bones of a story, it's a character wants something and they go on a journey to get it. And that's, you know, every story boils down to that as its essence. But, you know, it's like the Lord of the Rings and Star Wars are above everything else just because they were so well done and they were, you know, so iconic that you kind of have to throw those out of the conversation.
Yeah, they get their own shows or multiple shows for sure. So these are just four that I think we love. I certainly love all four of them in different ways. And they each do something slightly different. Even as I, you know, we were talking before the show, even the two Conan movies do something a little different from each other. One of them is certainly more like a grandiose John Milius, Oliver Stone trying to be mythic, you know, and the other is a Roy Thomas, Jerry Conway Conan comic book brought to life. And that's not to say either one is better or worse because of that. It's just they're different. They're very different. The thing they have in common is of course, Arnold Schwarzenegger and a couple other members of the cast. And then Krull is kind of a strange hybrid of fantasy, science fiction, fantasy quest movie. It's really hard to pin down what that movie is. We'll get into that. And then I think The 13th Warrior is very unique in that on the surface, it just seems like a straight-ahead adventure movie, but there are mythological and mythic qualities that Michael Crichton hid under the surface, just barely under the surface of it, that gives it a whole nother layer of meaning when you get into it. So each one of these, I think, has something worth talking about, and that's what we will do. So first up, for those that haven't listened in a while or don't know, remind the listeners of what you do and what they should be checking out.
Oh, well, definitely they should be checking out the podcast that I host, mm-hmm. which is 30 Minutes of Geek, and you have been a guest on that as well. It's kind of a different variation of what you do here because, it's the shorter time frame, so I try and limit everything to 30 minutes and give people kind of a bite-sized chunk of a podcast. But we've got various guests, and we talk about various things. I know coming up we're talking Twilight Zone and Walking Dead, and we've got a couple of more Batman shows because we started with the 75th anniversary of Batman, kind of looking at various aspects of Batman. So we started with the comics, and we still have an episode about the TV shows and then another one that's all about the movies. So we cover a wide range of topics. And then also if people want to go to midnight-entertainment.com, they can find out all about the books and stories that I write. We just came out with the 15th anniversary edition of The Swindlers of Doom, which I know you've read, and mm-hmm. you got a great quote from you on the cover. So,
oh, cool.
Thank you for that. But that is out. It's on Amazon starting this week. And also our new superhero series called Extraordinary will be coming out in a couple of weeks. And I actually am going to be seeing you in Memphis this weekend and showing you that. So
yeah, well, I can't wait. Yeah, we don't get to see each other often enough in person, and but we're both going to be guests of Mid-South Con in Memphis this coming weekend. And I think this episode will be out the middle of the week of that week. So if you're listening to it early on the week of March 16, 17, 18, 19, 20 there, March 20 through 22nd, Jim and I will both be down in Memphis at Mid-South Con. So if you're in that area, come out and say hello, and we'll be delighted to see you and chat a little bit. Well, let's dig into our first film. We kind of rolled the dice a little bit and consulted with each other and decided to start with Conan the Barbarian.
Warrior. Thief. Gladiator. Conqueror. Conan.
They said you would come. A man of great strength. A conqueror.
Let us take the world by the throat and make it give us what we desire.
Slow drown in lakes of blood.
He's evil, a sorcerer who can summon demons.
Now they will know why they are afraid of the dark. Now they will learn why they fear the night.
Out of an age undreamed of becomes the most incredible adventurer of all.
This is the 1982 movie that, as I said a second ago, it's a De Laurentiis production, which should give everyone pause to begin with. But it's it was directed and co-written by John Milius, and I think the original story or screenplay was Oliver Stone, he of Platoon and Born on the 4th of July and all that. What do you think of when you look at that movie from 82? What were the circumstances under which you first saw it, and what were your reaction, and what do you think of it now?
Well, it's funny because I look at it, you know, how I perceived it at different stages of my life, mm-hmm. because when it came out in 82, I was 10, maybe 11. And I remember I was a big fantasy and sci-fi kid from very early on. And obviously I was a Star Wars kid and a Star Trek kid, but this was really like opening the door to adult themes and adult fantasy and science fiction to me. And so it was just crazy, the amount of violence and the amount of sex and just everything that was in that movie. And so, you know, as a kid, I was just blown away by the visuals and just the kind of visceral feelings that I had about it. And then as I got older, I really started to get into the story a little bit more and really got into who Conan was as a character and what they were trying to do with that first movie. And I know we've talked about this in some of the Star Trek shows that we did, where our view on things is very different now as adults looking at things than it was when, you know, they first came out.
Mm-hmm.
And that's certainly how Conan is to me. Like, I love this movie so much, and I always liked it even as a kid, but I love it now for different reasons. I mean, obviously some of the performances are really good in it, and it's one of those things where when you brought up De Laurentiis, mm-hmm. you know, his movies have kind of a negative connotation to them because, you know, whether they were done cheaply or done quickly, or, you know, they were just shot in Italy and, you know, they didn't use the best crew or the best cast, you know, this, for some reason, it was almost like lightning in a bottle because they were able to get John Milius to do this movie. And if there is any other person where the writer director fit the source material better, I don't know who it could be, because if, for those who don't know John Milius, you should really go look at, I don't know if you've seen the documentary that was done on him.
No, I haven't.
It's on Netflix now, and it's really great. He started out as a writer, mm-hmm. and, you know, he wrote some of the early Dirty Harry movies, and, you know, he wrote, you know, just a lot of those kind of like gritty men are men sort of movies, you know? And so when they brought him on board to do Conan, I do know that Oliver Stone's draft was very far away from the source material. I think he had set it in like a post-apocalyptic future. And, you know, he was trying to explain some of the magic and some of the monsters and things that way.
Uh-huh.
And John Milius came to it and he was like, no, if you're going to do it, it has to be Robert E. Howard's Conan. Mm-hmm. It has to be that character, and it has to be about the savagery of the time, and, you know, there's got to be this kind of, like, code that Conan follows, and, you know, it really did become more than what it should have been if it had been left up to Dino De Laurentiis and Oliver Stone.
Yeah. It takes on these sort of larger than life mythical tones. I mean, it's not just a straight ahead adventure story. There's the riddle of steel, you know, the whole idea that these barbarian people, the Sumerians, have access to be able to create steel weapons, and that's what Thulsa Doom wants early on. And I don't know, just something between the music, the Polydorus score, which is fantastic, the cinematography of it. It's just a very different movie in that everything about it seems larger than life and grandiose. And somehow even Schwarzenegger's quote unquote acting in this movie fits this sort of mythical larger than life, because he just kind of stumbles around the movie almost like a drunken giant that just lumbers through the movie, barely mumbling his lines. But it works, you know, in the context of this story, it works. It gives it this almost like it's a found footage somehow, rather than a movie about barbarians. You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Yeah, and that was one of the things that I always admired about what Milius did with this movie, was he used the cast to their strengths.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't try and force an acting performance out of Arnold Schwarzenegger that he wasn't capable of at that time. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, Schwarzenegger's got a lot more experience as an actor now, and you know, we could argue the pros and cons of his acting ability, but at the time, since he was still early in his acting career, no, he wasn't going to be able to pull off Hamlet, and I think Milius knew that and didn't want that.
Right.
Like, don't want that from Conan. You want what you got in this first movie, which is him being a barbarian.
Well, you know what the story goes... I don't know if you've heard this. The story goes that Milius would sit down with Schwarzenegger and they would go over the line readings like 40 or 50 times.
Right. Yeah.
Until Schwarzenegger was at least comfortable with them. He still, like you say, he still wasn't going to be doing Hamlet, but at least he knew where to put the emphasis in the sentence. He didn't even know that going in, you know.
Right. And, you know, even some of the stuff where he does have, you know, some pretty heady dialogue, he's able to pull it off. And that's why I said, I mean, you know, you're not asking too much of him, but they used him the way he needed to be used. And he pulls off the dialogue when he needs to. I mean, it especially like towards the end of the movie, when he does have some speeches that he has to make, you know, and I'm thinking about, you know, before that final battle where, you know, he's kind of like talking to Krom and just saying, you know, if you're not going to help me, screw you.
Yeah. I love that.
I'll do it myself. I mean, that's a pretty big speech, and he pulls that off and he sells it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody in the cast is kind of like that. I mean, you know, a lot's made of the fact that coming off of Star Wars and Empire Strikes Back, that James Earl Jones is in this movie as the villain and he plays Thulsa Doom. But you almost need that guy who's going to be, you know, more of the verbal villain to contrast against Conan, because that was the whole point of the movie to begin with. Thulsa Doom was this very charismatic person who got people to do what he wanted based on just his will alone. And Conan was the opposite of that, where he was just pure brute strength, and he was going to beat Thulsa Doom with his brutish, barbaric nature.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's not really the Conan from the Robert E. Howard stories. A lot of people don't realize that Conan in the original stories is fairly smart. I mean, he's certainly the equivalent of street smart. He's not just a big oaf, you know. But the thing is, I don't discount Schwarzenegger here, because I think that the character that Milius and Schwarzenegger create in the movies, while a different character from the literary Conan, is a really good one, and he's an iconic one, and it works.
Oh, yeah, and you can see where there's more stories with that character. Like,
mm-hmm.
It's not the Conan from the Robert E. Howard stories, but you could see him becoming that character.
Yeah.
It's almost like, you know, it was what it was meant to be. This is the first Conan adventure. I mean, we get the whole setup, and, you know, everybody makes a big deal about, you know, origin stories in movies these days and how they're getting tired of them. But this was before we were like origin story to death.
Yeah.
And so seeing him become the barbarian and knowing at the end of this movie, he's Conan the Barbarian, and he's going to develop into the character that's in the Robert E. Howard books, makes perfect sense to me.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's just so many iconic scenes in this movie. I mean, you know, there's the Tree of Woe where he eats the buzzard or whatever that lands on him to eat him. It's sort of, I mean, that really highlights the whole eat or be eaten, you know, kill or be killed world that they're in. And there's the big set piece at the end with the stairway on the side of the mountain that they built. And they built that out of wood, the producers, so they could burn the whole thing down at the end, which they do. I love that he's got is it Subutai that's his little buddy?
And
for those that don't know, Subutai was the actor was not actually an actor. He was a surfer in California. Was it Milius knew him?
Yeah, Milius knew him because he's a big surfer, and he actually, before he did Conan, you know, one of his first directing jobs was he directed this movie about surfers. And the guy was in that movie, and he said, "Well, that's Subutai."
Well, he said, "I want to find a guy like him." And they cast like 50 different actors, and finally, Milius said, "Let's just use him. Why are we trying to find an actor like him? Let's just use him." So he had that interesting trio of main characters plus the wizard. You have Mako as the wizard, and I believe Mako turned down Karate Kid to do Conan.
And he was so good in that part.
Yeah. Oh, he's great. Yeah. Let's see. What else about that movie? I mean, it's just. Oh. You've got the two big henchmen of Thulsa Doom, and I love it because every time I see them, I think, oh, it's the lead singers of Iron Maiden and Motorhead. they look like a couple of Hell's Angels. They don't even try to look like, you know, Dark Ages barbarian warriors. They just look like a couple of Hell's Angels hanging out on the set, and they said, "Here, put some fur on and go and swing a hammer or something." Those guys just crack me up, you know. But they're the right size for Schwarzenegger to fight, I think, is the key, right?
Yeah, and that was the thing, because you can't have him fight Thulsa Doom, because Thulsa Doom's whole thing was he wasn't the physical villain. So you had to have those guys be his henchmen so that Conan had somebody to fight.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you're right. The whole movie is kind of the origin story. You get the setup. You find out that the reason Conan becomes Conan is to try to track down Thulsa Doom after he kills his whole village and kills his mother and his parents, his father, you know, and you see him growing up and becoming muscle-bound and being a pit fighter, and we hit that... Oh, the most iconic scene of all. What is best in life? What is best in life, Jim?
Oh, it's been forever since I've seen it. Oh, I'm trying to think of what the exact line is. What is it?
I believe it's to kill your enemies, to drive them before you.
Oh, that's it.
And to hear the lamentations of the women.
And that's it.
That's what's best in life.
Lamentation of their women line. And, you know, what was really great... Even from a story standpoint, I mean, it's somewhat episodic early on because they have to set up where Conan comes from and who he is, and you know, the whole setup for Thulsa Doom and his quest for revenge. But it's also a typical like Dungeons and Dragons quest movie in that you've got the thieves that are going. Mm-hmm. To a tower, they have to break in because they want to go steal a jewel. That sets up them coming to the notice of the king, whose daughter has been kidnapped by Thulsa Doom, and the king, who is played by Max von Sydow.
Yeah,
I
love that.
And the fact that he gives them, you know, he offers them all of his treasure, like as much as they can carry, to go get his daughter.
Yeah.
And Subutai and Valeria don't want to go because they're already as rich as they could be. And Conan's the only one who wants to do it because of the revenge factor with Thulsa Doom.
Mm-hmm.
And then that sets him down a path because he goes without them, and that's when he gets caught and crucified on the Tree of Woe. Mm-hmm. And then they end up having to save him. So, you know, it's all of these things are leading to something else, and it's compounding quest upon quest upon quest, so that it's almost like a Dungeons and Dragons movie where they're all of the, you know, there's a next step that they have to go down.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's, so that movie, before we roll ahead, that movie actually only cost $16 million to make. I mean, it's hard to believe that it took them years to make it, mainly because they couldn't get enough money. They couldn't, the producers knew they wanted to make a Conan movie, but they couldn't raise enough money. It only cost $16 million. The initial box office was $130 million, so it was a big hit, not quite a, you know, humongous blockbuster, but a big hit based on the budget. And then because of video releases, it's probably made another $300 million since then, if more than that. So that movie has made quite a lot of money compared to what it originally cost. And it certainly made Arnold Schwarzenegger a star.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And he would go on to do a couple of other things. But then he came back 2 years later to do a sequel.
In an age when only the strongest survived, and only the ruthless triumphed, only one name became a legend. Conan the Destroyer. In his first adventure, he fought alone.
It is written that a woman child must make a perilous journey. I want you to take her on that journey.
Now, he joins a wizard.
What are they going to do?
Have lunch.
A warrior.
There are six of them against her.
One, two, three.
A renegade.
I think you're right.
And a princess. Together, they are sent by a treacherous queen across the lands of hostile kingdoms to solve the mystery of an ancient race and seek the power of a phantom city.
You're afraid of magic?
When it comes from evil,
this will
come anyway.
The Horn of Dagoth, Destroyer of Worlds.
The god will live again.
Enough talk!
If they cannot seize the horn in time, the world will be plunged into eternal darkness. Grace Jones. Wilt Chamberlain. Mako. Sarah Douglas and Arnold Schwarzenegger as Conan the Destroyer. The all-new adventures of the most powerful legend of them all.
Conan the Destroyer. Now, what is your opinion of this movie?
Well, you know what's weird is that because of how good Conan the Barbarian was, I don't know that they could have done a better movie.
Right.
I don't know that. I think they went about it the wrong way because they were looking at it as we need to make it more of a family movie because it was getting a lot of play. Conan the Barbarian was getting a lot of play on cable and home video. So you did have a younger audience that was coming to it that didn't see it in the theaters. And so I think the producers said, well, let's tone it down a little bit so that we can get, you know, kind of like Star Wars money instead of, you know, the hundred and something million dollars we made the first time around. And I just think that that took away what was unique about Conan the Barbarian. You know, the fact that it did have a serious adult tone to this fantasy setting was what made all of that work.
Yeah.
The fact that the second time around, they said, well, let's make it a little bit more comic booky. Let's throw in some comic relief and let's throw in, you know, more lines for Conan and let's have him be a little bit funny. And, you know, I think they were trying to play to Schwarzenegger's growing acting ability, but that wasn't needed with Conan. I mean, obviously he did other stuff where, you know, we did see him kind of grow as an actor, but he should have stayed as the more monosyllabic Conan the Barbarian for this series, because it just doesn't work if you try and make him more than that. And it's not Conan, it's Arnold. I think, you know, Schwarzenegger, I don't think that it works for him in that setting to kind of be the jokey Arnold that we came to know in other movies.
Yeah, I have very mixed feelings about this movie. I agree with what you just said, but I think that it's interesting. In a way, you're absolutely right that it's not. That's why I was saying at the beginning that it's really not a lot like the first one, because the first one, like I said, was so, like you said, well, the R rating certainly was a part of that. Exactly right. It had a more of an adult, grown up layer to it, whereas this movie really is more comic booky, more pulpy, less epic. This is like heroes out on an adventure, you know, as opposed to this epic saga of the origin of Conan. And so this is almost like Superman the movie, and then you get like Superman 3.
Right. Yeah.
And so the thing about this one, I like some of the additions. I mean, they bring back Mako as the wizard. He's awesome. And I like Wilt Chamberlain as the big hulking guy that may be a good guy, maybe a bad guy, you know, whatever. I liked Grace Jones. I mean, that was kind of her period there between, you know, the next year after this, she was in A View to a Kill, the James Bond movie with Roger Moore. So she kind of had her 84, 85 was her big time in movies. And she's kind of cool as the spear warrior lady, you know. But on the other hand, this one also gives us Frog. We have Tracy Walter as the, in place of Subutai, as like a thief who's a total coward. And everything about him annoys me. He's like if Jim Carrey in his younger days had shown up as Conan's sidekick, you know?
Well, and, you know, the thing that bothered me about it was, from a story and a character standpoint, I could not wrap my head around the fact that Conan was going around with this guy.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, it didn't make any sense to me because he didn't offer Conan anything, and he constantly caused trouble. And why Conan didn't just kill him or leave him for dead somewhere along the way, I could never figure out.
Two words, human shield. He could have held him up in front of an arrow or something, you know?
But, I mean, other than the fact that they tried to make it more family-friendly, I mean, this is the stereotypical Quest movie because, yeah, you know, it starts off with Conan being recruited to go on a quest. Mm-hmm. And, you know, help a princess find a jeweled horn so that they could bring back a god. And, it's a very complicated MacGuffin that they have to go out and get. But once they're out on the adventure, I mean, like you said earlier, I mean, it is like the stereotypical adventure. They end up having to gather a group to help them. They have to go through several obstacles and.
Yeah, it is. I mean, there are good things to be said about it. It's not a perfect movie. It's not the first movie. I like Olivia Dabo. I kept thinking that she was the same actress that's in The Living Daylights with.
Yeah, that's her older sister.
It's like her cousin or something. Yeah, they look just enough alike to fool me, but look different enough that I kept thinking that can't be the same. You know, but it's such an odd last name that I thought it must be the same person. Let's see. Sarah Douglas is in it. She was Ursa in Superman 2. She's sort of the evil queen, the sort of Disney villainous queen character. And then, you know, and I, what do you think about the Roy Thomas, Jerry Conway, Stanley Mann script? I felt like it. I could see what they were trying to do, but they just never quite. I don't know. For some reason, it probably would have worked better as a comic book. I felt like it needed a little extra oomph to get over the hump of what they were trying to do. What do you think?
Well, and I've always wanted to see what an early draft of that movie was, because yeah. I always feel when I watch it, like it may not have been them. It may have been more the producers, but somebody came along and toned that down. And I don't know for certain that it was them, because I know that they love that character so much. And, you know, the fact that they brought them in, and I remember when they first announced it and they said, you know, they were getting the two of them to write it. I thought, that's genius. I mean, those guys do the comic. Comic's great. I mean, it's a really good take on Conan as a character. So I was interested to see what they were going to do. But then it just became like this very watered down, stereotypical fantasy movie. And it was, to me, it wasn't Conan. And, you know, there were a couple of times where it gets close, but it just, to me, there's, I don't want to say mean-spiritedness, but it was a two-toned down, and Conan was not rough around the edges.
Yeah.
Much as he should have been. And I know there were a couple of times, especially when he's talking to the Olivia Dabo character, where she's obviously attracted to him, and she's, you know, trying to put the moves on him and convince him to, you know, stay and be her consort or whatever. And Conan just doesn't want to have anything to do with it. But it didn't seem like he was as rough as he should have been with her. And, you know, the idea was that he was still kind of grieving over Valeria, and that you got the idea that there was never going to be another woman that would come along that would measure up to Valeria. So Conan was just going to be by himself forever. And, you know, the idea that this young girl's trying to seduce him and, you know, get him to stay with her just didn't work for me because of Conan, not necessarily her.
There's two monster scenes in this movie that I feel like let the movie down. They do the great mirror hall scene. That's something that was in a, actually it was in, I think, a Kull story by Howard. And then it was incorporated by Roy Thomas into one of the Conan comic books, and they just brought it on into the movie. And it's great. It almost looks like something out of Krull, not to confuse Kull with Krull. It works right up until the ape monster in the red cape comes out. Now, in the comics and in the prose, in the pulp prose that Howard wrote, in both of those media, having a gorilla dressed in a red cloak really works because it has a kind of a Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde kind of a thing going, and it's very creepy and effective. But in the movie, they just kind of put an immobile rubber mask on a guy and then like a thin Red Riding Hood cape, and it looks ridiculous.
Well, and I think that kind of summarizes everything that I feel is wrong with this movie, because I think there was a lot of stuff that may have read very well on the page. If you read the script, you might have thought, yeah, this could be a really good movie. I mean, I really like this, and I like this set piece, and I like this fight scene, and I like the adventure they go on, and, you know, some of the jokes work. But then because of the cast and how it was shot and the effects they use, it just comes off as being cheap.
And
I don't think it works the way they wanted it to.
Yeah, the last scene is the same way, with a very sort of a, it's much more of a kind of a Hellboy, H.P. Lovecraft kind of a deal, where a monster from another dimension is coming down and inhabiting a statue with the horn. And you could imagine that working very well, but the monster just comes across as a guy in a rubber suit, and it's just not very effective. And Conan beats it very easily. If this is like some god that's going to destroy the whole world, how does Conan jump up on it and rip its horn off? So,
but it's not just any guy in a rubber suit. They used Andre the Giant.
Oh, yeah. Wow. That's pretty cool. Now, that's cool. I have seen the picture of Andre the Giant and Wilt Chamberlain from this movie standing on either side of Schwarzenegger. Schwarzenegger looks like a kindergartner.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he definitely does.
Go ahead.
It's funny because I was just talking to my wife about this. We were watching a Schwarzenegger movie, and I just happened to look something up, and he's only like 5'10", 5'11". I mean, we always get this idea that he's like this huge, massive guy. And I mean, strength-wise he is. And I mean, he still works out. And I mean, seeing some of the stuff from the new Terminator movie, he still looks like, you know, he's hitting the gym. But he's not a tall guy. And that's one of the reasons why Wilt Chamberlain works as kind of like the semi bad guy in this movie, because he is towering over Conan of all people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it has stuff that works, but like, I think we agree. It just, you know, I almost wish that they could do like a updated CGI version, like they've done the Star Trek movies, and replace the effects with new effects, digital right. effects. Oh, that would be great. I mean, imagine the mirror wizard Thothamon scene with updated monster effects.
You know what's really funny about the Destroyer is that, you know, we've hit on this a couple of times, that it just seems like it's a toned down, cheaper version of Conan. I, looking at it, they actually spent more money on the budget for Conan the Destroyer. I don't know how, because it looks like a cheaper movie.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure that even though it made about the same amount of money in the box office as the first one, I'm pretty sure it hasn't made nearly as much money in video.
Oh, no, because it's kind of an afterthought at this point. I mean, everybody loves the first one, and the second one's just kind of there.
Well, when I was sick last week and was just lying around watching TV, I was trying to watch some of these movies, and I immediately pulled out my copy of Conan the Barbarian, and then I said, well, I'm just going to keep rolling. Let's watch Conan the Destroyer. Let's go ahead and roll right into that. And I don't own it. I had to actually go rent it from Apple TV, from iTunes, to be able to watch it. I was shocked that I didn't own it, but I just have never cared to go get it. So I'm part of the problem, Jim. I'm part of the reason this movie hadn't made as much money on video, though I did contribute $2.99 to it last week. go ahead.
You know that I think they offered it to Milius at first because they wanted him to come back for the sequel, and he wasn't able to come back. So that's when they went in a different direction. So I've always wondered what it would be like if he had done the sequel, because I think there would have been a lot of fights between him and the producers, because I know the producers wanted to get a PG rating.
Yeah.
And this was even before PG-13 was around. So you were either a PG movie or you were an R movie. Mm-hmm. And there was no in between. And I really think that Milius might have walked off the set if they tried to get him to make a PG-rated Conan movie. Because I do think that when they originally submitted it, that it got an R rating, and then they recut it so that they could get a PG. So it also makes me wonder what they cut out to be able to get the PG.
The original movie has the scene where they bring the woman in to breed with him, and they take her clothes off, and she's topless, and he basically, I guess he rapes her. I mean, there's no other way to put it. She seems kind of like she's not thrilled to be there, so I think we have to say that he becomes a rapist at that point. I don't know how far we want to go down that road, but you don't have anything like that in this. And to the contrary, in Conan the Destroyer, you have he's defending Zula, the Grace Jones character. He protects her, you know, from Chamberlain's character. So it has Conan's more of a hero and less of a barbarian in the second one, and it does fit in, like you say, more with a PG rating than with an R rating. I think that tone runs all the way through both movies, those two different tones.
But to be fair, he does punch a camel in both.
This episode with Jim talking about Quest movies sort of ran long, so I've decided to break it into two about 45-minute episodes, roughly, give or take a few minutes, and give you two episodes for the price of one this time. Of course, the price is still free, so you're always getting a bargain with the White Rocket Podcast. So we're going to wrap up here for now, and join us on the next episode where we will cover the other two movies, Krull and the 13th Warrior. And for now, the Rocket's going to get on out of here. We'll see you down the road.
Griffin, Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek. Classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at ESONetwork.com.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.